You are listening to episode 131 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Accusations of Acquisitions.
Welcome to episode 131 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 30th, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and back from the streets of L.A., we've got my brother James Furlough.
Yeah, I survived.
Yes. Barely.
Yeah, it was good. Well, there was an earthquake, which I didn't notice at all.
Yeah.
We did go to Skid Row multiple times. It smells different than the rest of the world.
I noticed that. So, yeah, weirdly enough, we were both in L.A. for completely separate reasons.
Yeah.
And briefly at the same time over the last week.
Yeah. Did you actually make it over to the Skid Row area?
So where is Skid Row in relation to, let's say, the financial district?
It's near it.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
Dude, I don't really know either. What about Broadway?
It's like a four-block thing.
Yeah.
You know, because of the nature of my driving, I was following someone the entire time.
Yeah.
So I never actually had to learn any of the street names and where anything was. And, you know,
right.
It was just, oh, they're turning left, I'll turn left here. So I honestly couldn't tell you. Other than I know it's near the downtown area stuff. But, yeah, it was a good trip. I went down with the high school youth group, and we served folks down there. We call them our friends and neighbors.
Yeah.
And which I actually like, because part of the issue, I mean, you know, one of the issue is they're homeless and they don't have jobs and they don't have a way to get food. But the other issue is that they're often treated as discarded people, that they're not, I mean, like they're not even human, you know?
Yeah.
And so part of our job going down there was to just tell them, you are not forgotten. You are still cared about. At this time, all I can give you is a conversation and a smile. But I want you to know that we care about you. And so that's why they intentionally call them friends and neighbors, to kind of to set that tone for, no, it's not gross homeless guy.
So to settle the geographical question, I was on Grand, which is about six blocks from the border of Skid Row.
Okay.
So I was pretty close by, actually, and now that I think about it, I literally was within walking distance of you probably for most of the time we were there together. But yeah, actually I didn't go to Skid Row cause I was there for, what is that called? A location wedding
party,
but a location birthday. So ours was not as, high minded and humanitarian in nature. You know, basically we went to bars, went to Hollywood and did that
drove
whole thing.
Those streets and went, oh my gosh, look
yeah
at all the licentiousness.
Dude, so we actually, it's funny, I mean, it was interesting walking up and down Broadway, because which is two blocks away, and that experience of it, because, you know, I'm from San Francisco, spent a lot of time there, and just to, you know, kind of echo that, it's one of the things that I've become very aware of, at least in San Francisco, is that most of the homelessness is there. You know, if you look at the Venn diagram of health issues and homelessness in San Francisco, they almost completely overlap. There are very few exceptions in San Francisco are...
Now, when you say health issues, are you talking mental health?
Mental health, yeah.
Almost
basically 99, like, I'm not going to throw out a percentage, but I know the vast majority of it is mental health issues. It's you know, and which is tough, because it's like, you know, especially cities like San Francisco, I don't know, I'm assuming LA is similar, but I know in places like San Francisco, for sure, there are tremendous numbers of amount of generosity through the government to take care of those who need, and there's very little need for starvation and homelessness in San Francisco, but there's a lot of it, and it's mostly because where there's a tremendous amount of effort on the humanitarian front, for those efforts in a societally organized way, there's almost none for mental health. And, you know, in my brief period down there, it seemed kind of similar. It had all the same signs, and that's tough. That's really tough. I mean, we as humans in our society, we're not primed for mental health issues. We don't deal with them very well at all. And so, yeah, I mean, that's really cool what you were doing. And you were doing that with high schoolers too, well.
Design robots to take care of that for us.
Why would what?
I don't know. I'm just trying to bring it around to tech, and that was the opening I saw. Wow. I do think, I guess the way to genuinely bring it to tech is, yes, I was going out with high school students, and you know, we were in some ways brute forcing a solution, you know.
Yeah.
And which is fine. I think it works. I also genuinely believe that there are opportunities out there for tech companies to also solve that problem in a systematic way. You know, we talk about it with HP's printers, where, you know, we could brute force it, literally go out and ask people their questions, or we could build a technology that just does it all automatically for us. Yeah. And, you know, and so, and we try to balance the two. And I think that there are opportunities out there for companies, and there probably are tech companies focusing on that, and we just don't tend to focus on that space.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah, and I actually think this comes into stuff like Facebook's, you know, Facebook, what they're doing with the Facebook and Google, and, you know.
A little bit.
But,
it's,
you know,
how that sex hunger is a little.
Well, I mean, you know.
Or mental issues. It's a little disconnected. But
a lot of the, I'm going to say, definitely.
I'm with Bill Gates on that one. I'm sorry. I mean, the guy's a fierce competitor, and I love him for it. And he's willing to just, you know, give those zingers.
Yeah.
And I actually think he's right.
I don't know. It's funny. When I've come and tried to look at the bigger questions of how do you solve hunger in the world, how do you solve, you know, the vast majority of hunger in the world is tethered to a severe lack of education. I've always seen. And one of the things that's cool about bringing the internet to everybody is that, you know, if you have the internet and a $100 laptop or a $100 tablet that runs off of solar power, you have all the education that you could possibly get your hands on. And that can change the dynamics of how societies work and how communities grow and how education happens around the world in ways that I think are going to be almost impossible to quantify in centuries to come, because it'll just be so astounding that we won't even understand, like, how did you get educated before this? I think it's going to change dramatically, and a lot of that is coming from just giving everybody for $100 or less, giving everybody the ability to access all of the information in the entire world.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I could agree with that. And I think there's, you know, at the end of the day, there's probably a balance. You know, you need people like Gates who are fighting the immediate need of malaria. You know, because I like his comments where he's like, who cares if you have internet access if you're dying?
Yeah, and no, it's for sure.
Okay, that's fair. But it also makes sense at the same time to say, well, let's fix that absolutely core issue, which is, you know, I don't know how to say this without sounding horrible, but, you know, you're uneducated.
No, it's true. I mean,
but take that in the right way. And
irrigation,
you know, providing people with the skills and the knowledge required to not get malaria or whatever, you know, how to create clean water and how to problem solve. And, you know, and do those things. And I agree, the internet does help with that indirectly.
Yeah. So all of this has to do with a bigger topic of technology and the continuum core problem. Hey, you know what? This was a strange one. We were both ready. We were primed. Technology and the continuing corporate opera, which is sort of a goofy thing that we throw out there, but it's a made-up word that nobody else uses, so it's unique to us. And what does it mean? Exactly. What does it mean when we say the corporate opera? We mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology that they're developing. But before we get any deeper into these conversations, because I feel like this is going to be another one of those kind of like more ethereal, what does it all mean episodes. James has got a short disclosure that he wants to throw our way.
Yeah, I got two. First one is, you'll notice my voice is slightly strained. I was riding back, I was pretty much fine all week, even though I was a bingo caller for an elderly home one afternoon, and my voice got a little strained. Yeah, that was fun. Beach 17! What? B-17! But on the ride back yesterday, I was talking to a guy who I would argue is also going deaf. We had music playing in the car for the students in back. We were having a conversation. He was talking like normal, and I was practically yelling at him.
Yeah.
And we were in the car for like 4 hours.
Nice.
So I got to the end. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm done. So yeah, this is fun. And I'm okay. We should do this. So that's my first disclosure. Voice is a little weak, but hopefully you don't even notice and you're like, what's he talking about?
Yeah, you sound fine to me.
Feels weak to me. The second disclosure is that I work for, where did it go? I work for HP. I should have this memorized by now. But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions. Go ahead.
I read our tagline every time we do this show, but I can't tell you how often I'm out and I'm talking about the podcast to friends or whatever, new people I'm meeting, and somebody goes, give them the tagline, give them the tagline. I'm like, okay. And I have to do it off the top of my head. And so, yeah, it's learn it, James. You give it every single week.
Yeah, I know. Hey, we listened to part of the podcast on the drive home today, too, because nice. The kids were... It was so funny, man. We were, they were comparing their Instagram follower versus followed ratios.
Oh my gosh!
You know, and I know it's just funny, and so they were doing it, and you know they're all proud of themselves because they've got like 20 and 30 followers or something like that, and I popped mine open. Oh yeah, and every single one of them was following almost twice as many people as. We're following them.
Okay.
Yeah, so they have what I would call a negative ratio.
Right.
Or it's less than one, I guess, is the way to think about it.
And they were in the 20s.
Yeah, 20s and 30s. Okay. You know, and they're all going back and forth, and I know you're looking yours up right now.
I'm holding it right now. And, I'm ready.
Yeah, ready to I know.
High schoolers.
I know. Feels so good, doesn't it? Well, that's what I do. I bust mine open real quick, and I go, let's see what mine is. Oh, it looks like, 52 people. I'm following 52 people, and they're like, whoa. And they're all following, like, you know, like I said, it's like, they're following with similar numbers, you know, 61% of us following, like, 90. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. And then, and I'm like, and it looks like I have, 87 followers. And they were just nice. Like, what? And, yeah, it was pretty funny. And then I was like, yeah, I'm pretty popular on the internet.
Yeah, kind of a big deal.
Then this guy was like, oh, what's your this one guy was talking to another Tumblr person, and I was like, I don't think I can see how many people are following me on Tumblr, but I can see that I'm following 17. And they're like, wait, you have a Tumblr account? I'm like, yeah, guys, I'm. Is that cool or not cool? I'm not sure how to interpret what you just said. And so it was pretty funny. So that was how we got on the topic of, they're like, well, what do you post on there? And so I was like, well, podcasts, blog posts, photos. Yeah. You know, I reblog stuff. I don't know. It's Tumblr. And they're like, podcast? What's that? And kind of went from there. So we listened to it for a little bit. It was fun.
That's very cool. That's very cool. For the record, 91 followers, 75 following. Yeah.
Nice.
You know what the problem is? Every once in a while, I look up some of my friends. One of my friends from college. I don't need to get into the nature of my relationship with her too much. Her name's Kendra. 613 followers, and I'm like, oh man, she's always been so much more popular than me.
She's a girl.
Come on. I know girls are special and they tend to get more followers, but it's ridiculous. Come on. But so I try not to be too proud because I want her to really look at it. It's like, you know, anyways, yeah, but if you want to follow us, by the way, we are engaged in the social media thing, and if you want to follow us throughout the week, see all sorts of pictures from Los Angeles and trips, and but first, let me take a selfie type pictures. Have you heard that song yet? Uh-huh. Yeah,
you
good.
Know what? I have not heard the song, but I have heard of the song, and some girls on the trip sang it for me with the Valley Girl accent and all.
The vocal fry, yeah. I love it.
So I know about the song, but I haven't heard it yet, and I'm kind of like, man, I almost want to get it. It's so crazy over the top.
I definitely bought it.
Here, so, okay, this is why we have this setup here. So we can do this.
Wait a second. Let me finish this thought out really quick.
Yeah, finish.
If you want to follow me on the website, my Twitter or on the internet, my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is nextwiggin4. Let's bump those numbers up. And I'll probably, if you ask me to, I'll follow you back because, you know, I'm generous like that. We'll improve each other's numbers. I was going to say something profound, I'm sure. Well, I don't know. This isn't it.
It's not it. It's got to be this one then. Does it have a picture of Mr. Potato Head?
No, it's called hashtag selfie.
Oh, all right. Hashtag.
But I like the ampersand, not the ampersand, the pound sign.
I know. I know what a hashtag is. Jeez, man.
There we go.
Oh, nice. Oh, I thought it was a girl who sang it.
No, it is. Well, she talks it. It's weird.
She's not saying anything right now.
Can you guys help me pick a filter? I don't know if I should go with XX Pro or Valencia. I want to look tan. What should my caption be? I want it to be clever. How about living with my bitches, hashtag live. I only got 10 likes in the last 5 minutes. Do you think I should take it down? Let me take another selfie.
Yeah, that's probably all we needed at. I can't get over the... I love the... Help me pick a filter. I want to look tan. Oh my god. I don't know why, but that song just... It makes me so happy.
Oh man. So
what's your Tumblr?
Yeah. I am jamesfurlow.com and at James Furlow on the Twitter, James Furlow on Instagram, James Furlow on the other one.
Gotcha. Google it. It's there.
By the way, I haven't fully tried it yet, but I did learn about a new they're calling them semi-anonymous or almost anonymous, I can't remember how to say it, you know, thing. It's called Rumor, R-U-M-R. I haven't tried it yet. It's similar to Secret, where they also call that semi-anonymous in the sense that it makes all the connections using your address book. It just doesn't tell you what they are explicitly.
Interesting. So, so if you do want to follow, if you want more of like the hub of where everything is. Exactly. You know, this show I can already feel like it veers like it's so far it's veered wildly from like being popular with high schoolers to like, you know, social, you know, importance. It's going to be a tough one and it only gets
deeper. That's because I've been up since 6 a.m. and I drove for 10 hours after having an hour and a half delay due to car trouble. So
I know. Good times.
I'm a little, you know.
I get you. So if you want to get all of this information, go to furloughbros.com. There you're going to have links to all the articles we'll talk about today, which there will be a lot. The YouTube video, links to the podcast, show cuts, all the good stuff. It's all there. Check it out.
It's all there.
Google it. Share it with friends, family. It's awesome.
Take a selfie with you and the furloughbros.com website.
But first...
Or of you wearing some swag from the Furlow Bros store, which can be found at furloughbros.com/store.
There we go. So,
I'll go first.
Okay, talking about it.
So, this is actually kind of interesting. Disney has acquired Maker Studios for a minimum of $500 million.
That's awesome.
And they could make as much as $450 million. And so what is Maker? Maker Studios is a group of YouTube video producers. I guess it's YouTube creators. Creators, that's the word.
Makers.
They're video makers. I guess what happened is that at the beginning, it was a set of folks who were like, you know, if we band together, we can cross promote our videos, we can share resources, we can, you know, do all that kind of stuff, and therefore increase our subscribers for everybody. So it was this idea of, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts type of thing. And apparently, Maker has kind of grown into something ginormous, which is cool. So there's actually thousands of creators who have hundreds of millions of subscribers. And so altogether, they get 5.5 billion video views per month.
Which is a lot. And
yeah, it's a couple more than what we do.
Yeah.
Times a lot of zeros.
Yeah.
Maker, they also managed to raise some significant moolah along the way. They raised $666 million for a valuation of $300 million. And so, you know, they obviously did well there in terms of what they, you know, their multiple there, which is cool. So it's one of these multi-channel networks, I guess, kind of. It's one of the biggest ones that are on YouTube. And so Disney bought it, essentially. Yeah. And there's still some questions out there about like, okay, well, why did they buy them and what do they plan to do with them? You know, like, for example, you know, Disney kind of gives just their normal positive outlook of, you know, we like to be proactive about trends that we see happening, and this is a trend that we see going down, so we're getting in on it to learn about it and to just be in the mix. Apparently Disney actually already had like 70 channels already. I subscribe to the Muppets channel, which is primarily a promotional tool for sure. It's interesting. You can always tell when they've got a movie coming out because all of a sudden it gets active. And as the movie gets closer and closer, it gets more and more active. And then once it kind of is released, they're done.
Yeah.
And they move on. And I've watched them do this twice now, you know, and it's okay. And I've kind of, after a while though, I had to stop watching them because I'm like, I'm going to know the entire story before I watch them. So they were saying that's primarily what they've been using it for. Whereas these Maker videos, that's not what they are. You know, they are content for the sake of consuming the content. It's not trying to push you to something else.
So my question is, how do you get in on the business? You know, from a very practical perspective, how do we do this?
Yeah, right. That's a good question, actually. We should look up Maker afterwards and be like, is it too late to get in?
I would say, what do you think I'm doing like as we talk?
Yeah, nice. There's a part of me too, again, you know, people are like, well, what's Disney going to do with this? And I think Disney, you know, I think they're cool in the sense that they're like, we don't know. But I've, you know, I think it's going to be a two-way street, right? Where, I read, you know, the ESPN biography, which is a fantastic book. It's like, These Guys Have All the Fun, I think is the name of the book. A friend of a friend recommended it, and I listened to it, and it was amazing. It's all done in first-person interviews. It's really good. But one of the things that you learn in the book is that ESPN didn't become the mega giant that we know it is today until after Disney bought it. And it was one of those things where it was just a combination of they both benefited from each other, I guess. And it made for some pretty interesting combinations. And I've got to believe that Disney's got an eye for this with a similar deal where they're going to see it go both ways where, A, sure, it will help them. They can promote bigger movies, theme parks, you know, they can promote their stuff across this entire network of 5.5 billion views. You're like, that in itself, they're like, that's worth money.
Yeah.
Probably $500 million worth of money would be my guess. So we can do that. And then on the flip side, you know, they can also promote other, you know, other properties, you know, ESPN stuff. If they got a game coming up, boom, they can put it up there. And then I think they can also help out the makers where they're like, hey, we've got video recording equipment and editing resources. You know, they have all this back end for like high level professional big time things, right?
Yeah.
And we've watched them do that with Marvel, where they took what was pretty cool and like made it amazing.
Right. It was we see a lot of great ideas, we see a lot of potential here, and we know you want to make Avengers and the whole suite of movies that go along with it. You can't do that on your own, so let us help. You know, and all of a sudden these incredibly ambitious projects were possible, where talented people without the resources suddenly had it.
You're watching Star Wars come back. I remember again with the Muppets,
Despicable.
Disney bought Tapulous around the same time, and so they came out with a Muppets Tap Tap game.
Right.
And it was the Muppet songs that you could tap to, and you're like, that's brilliant, you know, in the sense that it's an awesome cross promotion tool. So I think you'll definitely see them do those types of things as well, and just elevate the quality of the content of maybe not all the channels, but at least some of the premium channels for sure.
And I also think I got one more.
Go for it. And then I also think that you're going to see it go the other way, where clearly these guys have figured out how to manage and keep together a whole bunch of these different creator videos, and they've probably learned some things along the way. And I think about like, you know, ESPN is a company that I instantly was like, man, they could totally benefit from something like this. There isn't, as far as I know, there's not a good ESPN YouTube channel. And I don't know why, and maybe there is, and I'm just not into sports as much as I think I am, and which could be very true.
Yeah.
And you know, and so there's an opportunity there where they're like, dude, we can integrate some of the ESPN stuff or some of our other digital shorts, and we can learn from them to make our big properties just that much more effective. You think about like, could you do something? You know, I've kind of been playing around with this idea of, you know, again, going back to those wristbands that were in the parks that, you know, that Disney World's starting to get, where what if you had it set up where I keep trying to think about how they can personalize the experience for you. But again, they should theoretically know that when our mom and dad went to Disney World, that they were related to us because Lisa was that shared connection.
Right.
And I would have loved to have seen, they didn't, but maybe they won't. But anyways, it would have been interesting if Disney was like, hey, James, record a personal message for them. Do it in video, and we'll host it on YouTube, and we'll put Disney wrappers around it or something. You know what I mean? And then when they go, how crazy would it have been when they checked into their hotel, and it said, like, on the video screen, play, and it was like, hey, mom and dad, you know, this is James. Just wanted to say, I hope you have a great time. You know, this is going to be great. And Disney, you know, and as a thank you, and I don't know, Disney's like, buy your mom and dad dinner one night for 50% off, you know, or it's something like that. So I'm like, hey, and I got dinner for you Wednesday night. Enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a short form video, essentially. And so I think that there's things like that where Maker can have an influence on those types of programs in ways, and it's just so deeply integrated where like you don't even know, but yet it makes all of those other experiences just so much better.
And there's a part of me that wonders how much of this is an act. You know, on top of all that, I think another possibility in this is, you know, that this is kind of an acquihire sort of situation to some degree.
You think about it,
you know, the Biebs, Justin Bieber, you know, was a YouTube star before he, you know, hit the music scene. And if that's how
they're getting talent early and cheap, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, all of a sudden you work for Disney and you're part of that. And that's probably going to be, you know, if we were to go to Makers, say we want to be part of the network, and they said, yeah, go for it. You know, we're going to sign our lives over to Disney and all of our content over to Disney, and we're part of the Disney team, which would be awesome because I think it's a good team to be part of. But at the same time, you know, if NBC Universal came to us and said, you guys are the next big thing, we'd be like, go talk to the mouse about it. Because we agree, but, you know, and so they're going to lock up a lot of upcoming stars in this giant network of that crowdsources just a lot of people putting their own time and effort into showing this is what we do, this is how we do it, and then the crowd determining whether or not it's popular. And if you rise up high enough, you know, Disney can take you to the next level. Or say, we like your talent and we want to bring you over here to do something else. So I don't know. I think, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of – I have a feeling that Disney sat there and they had a long discussion about it, and they finally said, you know what? We got some ideas about what we're going to do. We have a few solid concrete plans, and we got a lot of questions that we think are exciting, but let's see what happens, you know? and nobody – I'm willing to bet that nobody really knows what the long-term consequence of this is going to be. They just figure it'll be good, you know, and yeah. – and, you got two companies that know how to manage a lot of talent, and that's potentially powerful, I think. So, cool. Dude, this is an acquiring week, dude. There were purchases being made, money being thrown around, Disney buying Maker. We'll talk about a small social network that bought some crazy virtual reality stuff later, but right now – Intel made an acquisition.
Made an accusation.
You are the criminal. They bought.
You are purchased.
They bought.
I choose you, Pikachu.
Exactly. They bought Basis Science. If you've been listening to the show at all, you've heard
us
talk about.
What was the basis of that purchase?
Aha. Uh-huh. Clever. If you follow the show at all. I know. if you follow the show at all, you probably are vaguely aware of who these guys are. Obviously, I'm a fan of the Fitbit. I want my iWatch health tracker. Google's gotten into all their iWatch stuff. But Basis was one of the watches, the smart watch tracker things that I've been very excited about. It is, in my opinion, and in a lot of people's opinion, they are the number one wearable for tracking all of your vitals that's commercially available.
Really? Number one, huh?
Numero uno. They're not the best selling. They're the best technologically. The Basis B1 can monitor your heart rate, blood flow, heart dissipation. All sorts of different stuff going on. It did perspiration. It all syncs wirelessly over Bluetooth to your phone. They've got an app. They've got APIs. They've got all the cool stuff. It's basically a health tracker where most people were building something that just did pedometers. These guys were like far and above that. Samsung came out with their Galaxy Gear Fit, and I don't think it's as cool and wicked awesome as the Basis, but the Basis just doesn't have a very big, you know, doesn't have a lot of traction, and that counts for a lot. But technologically, it's packed with stuff, and it's the direction that Apple is going secretly behind closed doors and nobody knows about. And I think what you're so this cool company this week, Intel swooped in and bought them for $100 million. It's actually making it the smallest acquisition of the week. But they, not a lot of talk, not a lot of news. This actually happened about an hour before Facebook announced that they bought Oculus VR, so nobody paid attention to it at all.
It happens.
Yeah. What I find really interesting about this is that, you know, clearly, you know, we've been talking a lot about wearables, companies getting into this area of technology, and I think one of the things that you see with, you know, the cell phone industry, especially in Intel's concern, is, man, they missed the boat. They are not in the mobile phone game at all. There's really only three chipsets out there, three chip lines that put into phones: the A7, the A series from Apple, the Snapdragons from Qualcomm, and the Tegras from NVIDIA. Outside of that, nobody even buys. Nobody buys anything. Intel, like, barely has an offering. And I think that really bothers them because that's kind of what they do. And
yeah, it bothered me too.
Yeah, and they've definitely missed the boat. But I think what they're seeing is what most of the tech media world is seeing and what the tech companies are seeing is that wearables are a huge potential next step, especially health tracking wearables. And, you know, this is right in Intel's bell horn. They're great at building, you know, integrated silicon chips and crazy chipsets and stuff that requires super tiny footprints and a lot of, you know, really sophisticated transistor technology. And so they're buying somebody who's already got, you know, got some movement going, and they're going to bring them into, supposedly they're going to bring them under the wing and, you know, start to take that technology hopefully to the next level. And I think it'd be really interesting. I think it's good news for Intel. I'm glad to see that they're realizing they have to do something other than hope that Windows will remain the number one platform in the world, because if they hope that's going to happen, they ain't got much going for them.
True.
So, yeah, it's cool. There's not a lot going on there, but I think, you know, it's one of those, it's not a big deal today, but I think in a year to 5 years, we'll look back at this acquisition and, you know, think it's a big deal. Oh, man.
Yeah, some of the comments were mixed, but I don't know how, you know, how authoritative they are, but one person is like, oh, this is awesome. Another person's like, yeah, except, like, it doesn't really work as well as they say it does.
Yeah. So, well,
yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Intel has pretty high standards, so I've got to imagine that they're not going to take something on if they didn't think it could work.
Yeah. I do think that it probably, yeah, I would agree. I doubt that it's necessarily metal growth.
Well, that's why they don't have a mobile chip, right? They couldn't make something that met their standards, and so they didn't.
Right.
It's probably a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, totally unrelated, but yet related, because it was in my recommended for me section. There was an example of the latest Lego machine to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah,
like just over 3 seconds is the new record. It's pretty crazy.
I love how there's
20 arms.
I like how there's like different categories of solving Rubik's Cubes, and there's like the. There's the category of humans solving Rubik's Cubes. There's the category of machines solving Rubik's Cubes. And then there's, like, subcategories of machines solving Rubik's Cubes, like the Lego machines that solve Rubik's Cubes, which is its own category, and which they don't do it quite as fast as, like, the just machines that solve it. Because the machines that solve it, like, they've got, like, these super highly articulated stuff, and they can do it in, like, 2.5 seconds, whereas the Lego ones they're only at 3 seconds, and human beings are only at 7 seconds, which is... it's actually faster than that, longer than that. I think it's, like, 20 or 23 seconds, but it's still... astounding. As someone who's never actually solved a Rubik's Cube, because I never took the time to learn the strategy, I'm like, I'm sure I could do it, which is why I've never bothered to. You know what I'm doing right now? I'm probably gonna get challenged and we're gonna have to actually do it. But I've always like, it's just.
I'm not gonna be the one to challenge you, so you're good.
Okay, I appreciate that. But. Yeah,
I can't either.
It's a cool little robot that they built. I love.
I think Jesse can. You can solve a Rubik's Cube, right, Jess? Not completely. That means no.
I can get one side.
That's easy.
Exactly. So yeah, that's cool. What do they have to do with anything?
Nothing. An article section. I thought it was cool.
That's right. So, since we're talking about acquisitions, and so something dropped this week, boom, that had the internet in a tizzy. I one of the things I want to mention first off is one of the things I like about doing this show is when I feel like we call something, and I feel like I've been making a big deal about this whole VR stuff because I personally think it's exciting. Obviously, parts of the internet think it's very exciting, but I'm glad we did a little bit of a large-scale biopic last week because it segued. If you listen to the show on Monday and were paying attention to the news at all on Tuesday, you knew exactly all the players in this little dust-up that happened when Facebook announced that it was buying Oculus VR, the company behind the crowdsourced Oculus Rift, currently on its second dev package release. Kind of a big deal. So basically, the nuts and bolts of the story, they hired the entire Oculus team, bringing them into the fold for $2 billion. It was like $600 million in cashola and $1.4 in stock equivalents, which is a lot of money. It's about $15 billion less than WhatsApp, but, not everybody can be one of the biggest text messaging apps in the world. They've said that Facebook has said that they're going to do basically what they've done with Instagram and WhatsApp, which is leave the teams generally intact. They're going to help them with recruiting and offer technical support and financial backing. But they're going to leave the teams relatively autonomous, and let them kind of keep on keeping on doing what they were doing. That's the boring part of the story. But there is a
I want to know why.
So I'm going to start with the timing of it because I think this is fascinating. So. Obviously, everybody was asking a bunch of questions. Somebody asked Facebook, because this is interesting. You want to know how long was this deal in the works for? Especially because Facebook tends to move really fast in these sorts of things. They like to start the conversation, make an offer, and close the deal before anybody else even realizes what's going on, so that they don't get so that Google or Apple or somebody with an even bigger, deeper pocket comes in and says, "Nope, we want this first." They like to do it fast, and this was no exception. They say that the deal took about 5 days to sort out. So the deal was announced on Tuesday, and they started talking about it about 5 days earlier, which those of you who can do math means that they closed the deal on Monday before they announced it. So 5 days before that would have been Wednesday, which, if you were paying attention to the podcast last week, was the day after Sony announced their new headset offering, which is really significant to this entire conversation, I think. Because basically what happened was, both parties need a reason to do it, right? So the big question is, why did Oculus Rift go with it? What was the Oculus VR? What was the timing of this whole thing? That was the timing of the whole thing. I think that they had been kind of – Facebook had approached them, or Mark Zuck had shown up to their labs about a month and a half ago. About a month or two ago, he'd shown up at their labs, had hung out, liked the technology, probably had started the conversation at that point, but it was when Sony made their announcement, and it's clearly got some advantages over the Oculus offerings. That was when they got super serious and were like, okay, let's talk to Facebook.
Well, similar to what we feared for with Pebble and their watch. We're like, it's genuinely cool, and they're going to get completely lapped.
Right.
If they don't get acquired by somebody.
Right, because they're big boys that are dropping some serious bucks to beat them.
Yeah, it's an interesting open space where a lot of money can be made.
Right, exactly. So why did Facebook buy Oculus VR? That is a great question, since Facebook is a social media conglomerate who makes most of their money off of advertising. So there's a couple of theories that kind of go with this. One of the big ones is that this is about the hardware land grab. That there are a bunch of hardware companies out there right now, just like there are social media companies that are kind of coming up at value, and they're starting to make they're starting to make noise. Google bought they make that themselves. Bought the Nest hardware, and that technology is important because it you know, or rather, it nobody really knows what the fit on that one is. That one was another one where everyone's kind of like, well, what does this have to do with any part of your company? And Google basically said, hey, we think it's interesting, we think it's exciting, we think it's the future, and we don't want it to belong to somebody else, so we bought it.
And we're selling Motorola. We're just not telling you that yet.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of a, you know... So part of it is that. I think Facebook felt that somebody eventually, probably soon, was going to buy these guys, and they didn't want to be on the butt end of the joke.
Might as well be us.
Exactly. They have said, basically, that from what they're concerned, they're going to let them keep doing what they're doing. They're not really coming out and saying what the long-term plan for this is. Rumors started circulating almost instantly that it was going to be rebranded with, I think the exact words were, it was going to be, they were going to rebrand the interface with the Facebook thing and then put ads in it, which everybody was like, it's basically a monitor you strap to your face. Like, how do you build a... I mean, what does that even mean?
I can already see the name. That's all you call it. Just face.
Yes. And so so there's a lot of – so this is part of the exciting part, right? Because there's a lot of rumors that have been circling. Why did Facebook do it? Are they trying to build a virtual Facebook wall? Are they trying
Dude,
to –
Dude, it's kind of like what we talked about last week because we're brilliant.
Mm.
We're like we're doing the podcast virtually in front of each other.
Exactly.
Nothing for the actual podcast itself, other than we feel like we're in the same.
Dude, it's all about in the VR world. The term right now that everybody's throwing around is presence. It would give you a sense of presence.
Yeah, there you go. Presence. I love presence.
We use immersion for something else, so we can't use immersion anymore. But we want to be present in the situation. So yeah. So this is ridiculous. And so there's just a lot of theories floating around of what does this mean? What do they want to build with it? I'm here to tell you that Facebook, I'm telling you this. This is I don't have any inside sources other than I can see what's going on.
Other than that's obvious.
Facebook just wants to build Oculus VR technology, and they want the profits from when this product sells. That's really all they really care about. It's funny. I mean, like, you know, you think
you
about.
Think so?
I think so. I think that's long.
I see it as very similar to like to YouTube. You know, when Google bought YouTube at the time, people were like, "What the heck are you doing? This is not even anywhere near your core competency," and which I is true. You know, if you think of Google as a search company,
right,
and I think that if you think as Facebook narrowly as a social network company, yeah, you're right. It doesn't make any sense. But I think it's one of those where, you know, 5-10 years down the line, you'd be like, yeah, that was a brilliant move.
One of the things that we talk about on this show, and I've been saying this for years, is that I don't think Facebook.
Saying this for 10 long years.
10 long years. Hey, Ben Cohen. Hey, Ben Cohen. Anyways, it's a great movie. I love Independence Day.
That is classic.
But one of the things that I've been saying is, you know, what's the difference between Facebook and MySpace? It's, you know, that's the big argument people make. And I've always said, MySpace was a content company. Facebook is an engineering company. And what does that mean? MySpace was all about what they were serving up to the people. But their core competency wasn't building an incredibly strong internet infrastructure back end. Facebook, as far as they're concerned, I mean, they've built an interesting product, but most of their time is devoted to making sure that the technology works and the technology is amazing. And so they've got brilliant engineers working on incredible projects, and it's almost led to this sort of weird thing of the content on Facebook isn't as strong, but it's led them on these projects like trying to do the whole passport thing where they wanted to become your password on the internet, which if I don't know if you've used the internet lately, but like everything says you can sign in through us or through Facebook. All of your social media apps, whether it's, you know, WhatsApp or Secret all your different like matching Tinder type apps and stuff, you'll always sign in through Facebook so that they can connect you with all your friends. And the whole point of all of these different things is that Facebook is doing exactly what they thought they were going to do, and that's helping them build a more robust, you know, presence. So even if for some reason another website got more users than Facebook in the realm of social media, that wouldn't be the end for Facebook, because they've got these other things that they're working on. They're taking on Instagram, they're taking on WhatsApp, making them better, improving them, increasing their user number, increasing the ability for these systems to perform. And now they're, like you said, they're even going so far as to say, these are our core competencies, these are what we're really good at, but we're brilliant engineers, we can do more. And so they're taking on a bigger project. And this goes back to like when Google, not just YouTube, because it used, at least YouTube was a web platform. I think a better example is when Google, I don't know, launched Android and got into the whole hardware game. And everybody asked the question, why would Google do this? And because Google said, because we have to. Because if we don't, somebody else is going to own this. And that's bad news for us. And if we own it, we can make it the way we want it, and it'll benefit us. And so they've built a great platform. And I think one of the things that's happening here is, you know, I think, you know, in reality, Oculus Rift is going to be fantastic for gaming, and that's going to be the first place that it's really going to touch down, and it could get just smothered and destroyed by Sony, because the reality of it is that Sony, and this is, there was an article written on Monday that I completely agreed with and wanted to talk about kind of as a recap of last week before Facebook dropped this news on Tuesday, and this was perfect. But it's, Sony has a huge advantage over Oculus Rift, over the Oculus team, in that the Oculus team is basically a monitor. You still need a computer, a gaming rig, a high-end gaming rig that can do all the really fast rendering and do all the powerful stuff on the graphics end and actually playing the game. And then you also need input devices, whether that's like some sort of Razer nunchuck or a keyboard or a gaming pad. And there's no complete package, whereas Sony can say, we have a complete package. You buy a Sony PlayStation 4, you buy a game, and you buy the head unit, and it'll come with one of our magic wands and a gamepad. Everything you need, it all works. It's awesome. And get excited and buy our stuff. And, by the way, we can do it all for under $600. You know, it's just, it's a pre-packaged deal. It's a done-for-gone conclusion. Whereas, you know, Oculus, all they are is the headset. There's nothing else to them. And so I think what you get here is a real worry for Oculus, which led them into wanting the strength and financial backing of Facebook. At the same time, you know, if it's something that Facebook can give them and that sort of a backing. But I've been reading. I love reading. Don't you love reading, James?
Yeah, of course I love reading.
Good. Because I've been reading the Neuromancer. It's a classic of science fiction. If you've never read it, it's good in that it's sort of like it was the first of the cyberpunks, really and truly. It kind of defined what the genre would look like. And it is weird reading it and realizing that like half of the great science fictions in the last 10 years, last 20 years. Have like stolen directly from this book, like the entire like living in the internet matrix thing of the matrix. They call it the matrix because in the Neuromancer, that's what they call it, the matrix.
Oh, wow.
it's not just a like, and there's all these motifs in the Matrix trilogy to this book because it's just so foundational in what they do, and that whole VR thing, and when I'm reading, like, you read these different stuff for in the science fiction world where these are the inspirations for these companies. You talk about Google and, you know, what is Google search? What's it supposed to be? When you ask the Google team, what's Google search supposed to be? Where does it go eventually? And they say, we want it to be like the computer from Star Trek. And, you know, you ask these big questions, right. You ask these big questions about like, why is Google on this massive acquisition right now for buying all these artificial intelligence, deep intelligence, deep thinking companies? Why are they buying them? What's their hope here? Well, I can tell you what, they probably read the Neuromancer, and they're probably just trying to build the AI from the Neuromancer, which is horrifying because it like kills people and goes crazy. What it actually is is this hyper intelligent computer program that runs one of the biggest corporations in the world, while the owners and the family in this story are busy, in particular dying and going crazy. But in a better world where is that, you know, it's not a horrifying, you know, science fiction dystopia, the idea would be that an AI, just as Google can or a computer can fill in tasks of automation, a very, very intelligent computer program could fill in for a lot of the day-to-day business, you know, operations of running a corporation, being the CEO. And, you know, and so you have all these different things going on, and I'm telling you that Facebook and how this all relates is, I'm telling you, Facebook has read these books and these stories where they sit there and they go, the virtual reality world where people plug in and, quote, jack into the internet or jack into these experiences, that's the inspiration. Facebook is sitting there going, where we are and how we get to these things that people imagined 20, 30 years ago and wrote books about and inspired generations of technologists, we don't really know. All we know is that this is a stepping stone. This is part of how we get there. And because we know where we're going in the long term and we know that this is part of the trajectory, we own this company, we own this part of the future. And so in the short term, we just want to own it because we think it's a cool project and we think it's good and we think it'll be good for our bottom line in the next couple of years. In the long term, it puts us in a great place for when everybody experiences the internet and, you know, experiences the Matrix effect, and we can, you know, and because eventually, if you don't just have, you know, screens, you actually have these things on. You can do virtual tours of houses, the example that people give.
Yeah.
Or, you know, be in the room with somebody or go, you know, as classes go online, you strap one of these things on and you're in the room with your professor. You know, and those are really powerful things. Those are really powerful, you know, opportunities. And Facebook wants to be part of it. And they talk about that. That's one of the things they talk about, is the idea of being like, you know, being at a sports stadium. And, you know, and the Google cars for Google Maps are a great example of a camera that you set this camera up and it's live streaming all of these different videos. And then you can just like move your head around and get the full 3D effect in this like experience. And, you know, and that's huge. And they want to be part of that. That being said, not everybody is excited about this.
Okay.
I'm assuming you didn't really follow any of the controversy since you were in LA being a good human.
No, I just saw the big news and went, oh, wow, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so the internet freaked out.
That was kind of my initial reaction.
Yeah. People hated it. In the first couple of hours, not...
That's because we don't trust Facebook.
Yep, that's a big part of it. In the first couple of hours, Notch, the creator of Minecraft, who had been working with a deal with Oculus VR to bring Minecraft to the Oculus Rift, said, I'm canceling the project. I'm not doing it anymore. What's interesting is that got just a ton of play because he tweeted it out.
Wow.
But an article was written the next day, and he basically said he actually still thinks that this is actually a really good thing. He thinks that this is a great thing for Facebook to be getting involved with. It's a good technology that will leverage Facebook's strength, you know, the whole social experience thing. He still thinks VR is the future, and he thinks Facebook's a good company for it. He just thinks Facebook is a terrible gaming company. And his experience watching, you know, all these,
true.
Exactly. His experience watching the mobile gaming platform from, or Facebook's attempt at it was terrible for all those companies. And he's like, I just don't want any part of that. So, which is a valid criticism and something that, you know, Facebook's going to have to deal with, as they, you know, move forward in what does this product look like? Who does it go for? How do we develop for it? I think that also is another indication of what Facebook, you know, Facebook missed the mobile gaming, you know, wave. They missed the mobile hardware wave. They see that this is another wave that's starting to rise, and they want to be in on it. You know, more and more of the, why is Facebook doing this? The internet, dude, Reddit especially, because Reddit was one of the big forums where Oculus really made a lot of noise during their Kickstarter campaign, right? During the Kickstarter campaign, they needed to raise $2.5 million, and our gaming and our technology, they both really got on the bandwagon and put in a lot of money for these devs, and the company made their money and they're doing their thing, and people were really excited about this open source platform, and all of a sudden they sell out and it's amazing how mad the backers were. I thought it was really kind of interesting, because it's like these people are super upset, like you basically just ripped us off, it was a scam, like we donate money to your company and you just go and sell it for $2 billion and get your payday. They're like, what did you think Oculus was? what did you think your money was? Everybody who paid, you know, everybody got their thing for whatever level of donation.
It wasn't a donation, honestly. Well, it was a prepayment.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody who ordered a dev kit got one. Everybody who ordered a shirt got one. There's still any pre-orders for an actual device are still good. Everybody plans to honor those. Like, what did you think was going to go on here? And not to mention the fact that of the $2.5 million $25 million? What was the number? Oh man, I think it was a bigger number. I think I'm off by an order of magnitude. I think it was $25 million. The reality was they were working with like $75 million because they'd gotten like $50 million from other angels. Like there was a tremendous amount of funding going on for this company, and you know it's not like, you know, it's, yeah, Facebook gave them a tremendous amount of money for, you know, because they've got, you know, they just got done with their IPO, and so they still have a ton of cash. And so they're spending it because they can. And, but people who like, who take it as some sort of an offense, and it's funny, it's like when your favorite band who like is against the man and we do it for the music and they sign a record label and people get upset about it. And you're like, well, what did you think they were doing? Because people got so angry at Oculus, or so mad about Oculus selling out and to Facebook of all companies, which is just so weird. Cause it's like, I heard a lot of people saying it should have been Microsoft. This was a great purchase for Microsoft to make. Like, it's a great piece of technology.
I would have cried if Microsoft bought them.
I know, right? Like, really? Really? Like, really? You guys think Microsoft was a better purchase? And, like, Google could have done it, except that they've got their whole Google Glass thing going on, which, guess what, it is a direct competitor. You know, it's a different sort of technology, but that's – if Oculus does a good job with it and people prove that that's what they want, guess what Google Glass becomes overnight? And not to mention the fact that one of the biggest problems that I'm reading, people are keep predicting this, and one of the biggest problems with Oculus is that it's just too little on its own. It can't make it as a platform because there's no content and there's too much of infrastructure that needs to go into it. We like our tablets. We like everything. Well, what would be awesome? What would be awesome for me, in my opinion, is if you had the Oculus and it had a high-end video gaming processor, a mobile processor in it, and it ran Google Glass and you could load games onto it, and it was an all-in-one. Yeah, the graphics aren't crazy impressive. Like, you know, they're not Titanfall-level graphics, but they're, you know, like, let's say, you know, PlayStation 3-level graphics or 360-level graphics, you know, which your current mobile.
Still not bad.
I know, and it's just as, you know, immersive. Like, there are really powerful things that you can do with this stuff that these other companies are going to come at it with, like, you know, with a vengeance, and Facebook's going to be just right there with them. And I don't know. I mean, I just think in total, people freak out about so much, man, and I think a lot of it is Facebook has just got this rap that, you know, that they're having a hard time beating. And all of this, I think the most exciting part about this is, what have I been saying? The other thing that Facebook needs to do is they need to do what Levi's did with Dockers, which Levi's, you know, the story goes, Levi's started to make what are those called?
Dress pants.
Khakis. Dress pants and khakis, and nobody bought them because they're Levi's, and Levi's makes jeans. And so they came up with the Dockers brand. It's the same factories, the same cuts, the same pants. They just have a Dockers tag on it, a subsidiary of Levi Strauss, and boom. Everybody buys Dockers, and it's the most successful dress pants line out there. You know, Facebook has got a branding problem, and as they make these other brands that I think continue to succeed, continue to mature, people like Instagram, people like WhatsApp, and they realize that, you know, the Facebooks of the world are not all terrible, I think it's going to improve the company overall. And, you know, and this is just another piece of it. I don't know, I'm excited for it. I think as of Monday, when I read that article about the PlayStation, well, even last week, I think it became a much more compelling, holistic solution to the VR thing. I still like Oculus because I like the idea of like a full-blown computer and stuff. And I don't know, I just think the Oculus team is cool. But, you know, for me, it's up in the air. I'll probably get a VR thing because I want one. And it'll come down to how much it costs and what, you know, what requirements it takes. But I think that this really, really dramatically helps Oculus's ability to acquire the materials they need and get the manufacturing in line, because there's going to be a huge amount of upfront cost and capital required. And now they've got Facebook to make that happen. I don't know. I think in all, this is going to be a good thing. And to kind of like top it off, this whole discussion. So not only does the creator of Doom and Quake now work for Mark Zuckerberg, which is just kind of weird, but the chief VR guy for Valve, I can't remember his name, I have it somewhere. He left Valve on Thursday and headed over to the Oculus VR team and basically said, you know, and everybody thought that, you know, that Valve had a huge, you know, they had a real good shot at VR, and their smartest guy left to go work for Oculus, and he basically said, look, now that Facebook owns this team, they can be serious. Which basically his problem was, and the reason why he didn't want to go become the chief technology officer for Oculus up to that point, was it was too small of a company. They didn't have the money. You were throwing in, and it was going to be too easy for another competitor to take their great ideas and just destroy them through the sheer size of being a bigger company. And now that it's backed by Facebook, they're going to be a real tough cookie to knock over as long as they, you know, stay mobile. And so it instantly talent, you know, started moving in the right direction, which once again was really funny reading everybody on Reddit freaking out, like, what does this mean? I thought this was a bad thing. I thought everybody was like agreed that this is horrible. How can like Valve, our last hope for VR, be losing talent to Oculus now? Because don't they know that Facebook is evil? And like, you people are stupid. I hate you. It's interesting. I think it's super exciting. I love it. This is what I live for.
That's cool. I'm still just, you just gotta get one so you can.
I know.
So I can live vicariously through you virtually.
The dev kits are still on sale, man. I can get a dev kit too. It's like 350 bones.
That's the real deal.
I can plug it into my Mac Mini, and I can see you in 2D because you still have a 2D camera.
Wait for the real deal. There's something else that happened this week.
Okay.
Not exactly an acquisition, but definitely a merging of companies.
Yeah.
Is a way to think of it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Microsoft.
The big dogs.
The big dogs have decided that the iPad is not so bad after all.
Oh, nice.
And have come out with Microsoft Office for iPad.
Oh, baby. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a very big deal. What did they say? It's like 52 days or something like that after Satya has taken over. He, you know, has made Office available for iPad. And, you know, essentially reversing the decision that Ballmer had made.
Yeah.
According to the reviews, they say it works pretty darn well, actually.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because, according to everyone who I talk to, the Windows version of it is horrid.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They just, everyone is just like, yeah, you shouldn't switch. It's bad. Really buggy, just not really well done. And, yeah, every 100% of the people I talk to, and these are people who use Office every single day, and they're professionals, and they, you know, they get it. Every single one, 100% of them are like, yeah, I wish I could go back.
Go back to what? They don't like the latest version of Office? That's their problem?
20 to 2010.
Mm.
Yeah, they just, because things are broken apparently, or buggy or something. I don't know, because I don't have it. And not, once I heard, the second I heard that, I went, yeah, I'll wait it out. We'll see right. What happens. So, so that definitely happened. But yeah, they came out with it, and like I said, it sounds like on some level the reviews were pretty good of it. You know, they were saying it works really, really well, and I liked this one in Gadget. They kind of had the pluses and minuses down at the bottom. Oh yeah, by the way, it's Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
Okay.
I really just care about Excel. Word and PowerPoint are solvable type stuff. but they had a pros and cons list, I guess. The pros is that it's beautiful. It's got an uncluttered design and with lots of customization options, which is nice. It's also feature rich, which is also really nice. They said that run it on the latest iPad, it's got smooth performance, which is nice. And then it supports OneDrive and Office 365 as well. And they said it's like the only one that does that. So if you use OneDrive, they're like, this is cool. The cons, there's one like ginormous one. Subscription is required for full use. So if all you want to do is read, it's free. If you actually want to create or edit, it's going to cost you a minimum of $7 a month
to do. That's annoying.
That's for their 365 personal use subscription that's coming down the pipe. I'm just like, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I said that it's nice because it syncs with OneDrive. Yeah, that's all that it syncs with.
Yeah.
I guess it does also sync with a SharePoint, I suppose. So there's that. A downside, I was happy to see this in the cons list, unable to print documents.
Oh,
I feel like that's a missing gap.
That's a huge one.
An obvious one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I'm obviously, if you listen to the show at all, I'm not necessarily the biggest on printing, but even I'm kind of like, you're trying to build like the premier business app and you're not going to give people the ability to print. Like, yeah, it's archaic like, and old, but...
So you give me a Word document creating app that I cannot print my document.
That really seems short-sighted, and I don't care about printing, and I'm saying that seems really short-sighted.
I know, and I'm like, but it seems like an obvious gap. And then they write this as a con, is you can only insert camera roll photos into documents. So, and I don't know if that's specifically like...
I think that's just an iOS problem. No, yeah, that's probably, I know it's not. I know that's not true. But that's something that they'll fix. They'll fix that. That's a.
That's be my guess. Fix the printing. Fix the printing one. Microsoft. It's important to everybody. But yeah. So those are some of the pros and cons. I don't know. They talk about the implications behind it, where you know, essentially it's Microsoft. You know, Satya came out and announced it and was like, look, just like. The best camera for most people is the one you have on you.
Yeah.
they were like, sometimes the best tool for looking and editing documents is the device that you have on you. And that's not always a laptop. And so,
welcome to the party, Microsoft.
Speaking of the printing one, they did make a joke there, now that I'm remembering it. I was like, see, laptops are still relevant. you need them to print. So he's like, we want to be where our customers are at, and we want to give them all the different tools. So, I mean, it seems to be insinuating that they should eventually see an Android one, too, since they have pretty big market share, other than it's harder to develop for. My guess is they're going to have one. And, Microsoft has come over. You know, and the real question is, did they wait too long?
Yes.
And, you know, because it's been 4 years, and in that time, people have found alternatives. You know, iWork is free. If you you know, if you buy something after September of last year, if you bought something, then there's also Documents to Go, QuickOffice, Polaris, and Kingsoft. It's just some other general ones, and we've looked at a couple others too.
I'm gonna say, well, like, and don't forget Google Drive.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, they're like, people have an opportunity. Now, obviously, and I think everyone agrees with this too, it's, you know, for Word and PowerPoint, yeah, tons of alternatives out there. You never need it if you don't want it. If you don't want to, you don't have to use it. Excel's a little different, in my opinion. But even then, it sounds like I'm still not going to be doing what I normally do on this particular device. But, you know, I do have...
Yeah.
Go ahead. I don't know.
It doesn't do pivot tables.
Yeah, it's pretty lame.
Yeah, see, but, and that's the thing, is like there are certain tools that I feel like, you know, okay, I used Numbers quite a bit, but not a huge amount. But I've used, you know, what's it called? That one, Google's databasing. That's not databasing.
Numbers?
Spreadsheeting. Their spreadsheeting thing.
Yeah, I don't know what they call
it. I've used that, and I sit there and I go, dude, it does, you know, number crunching, it does most of the equations, it does, you know, charts and stuff. It does everything that I would want Excel to do, but it's where Excel gets super powerful with the macros and the pivot tables and those types of tools that this one doesn't do. Like, the only advantage is that if you're doing all those pivot tables and huge power things and everything, the rest of your ecosystem is Office. This allows you to continue that onto the iPad, which, you know, yeah, that's important. And from what I've read, and this seems to be kind of the direction that everybody was going, is if you already are invested in Microsoft to the extent that you're using, you know, you've got Microsoft 365 subscription already for your laptop and your desktop and everything else, well, then, yeah, it's awesome because it does everything it's supposed to do and you already have it. But if you're just, you know, if you're me and you don't have that yet and you're wondering if you need it, no, use Word, Pages, and Numbers or, you know, Google's Drive Suite and be happy with the freeness.
Yeah.
Oh. I do think they waited too long. I think people are going to find other solutions, they've given people clarity with the whole Excel thing, where it's like, I think they're weak there. I think that, or there's a chink in the armor there. I think people now are going to now really feel like there is definitely something to take from Microsoft. They're beatable there. That's all that they have left, and it's not impossible to clone it to the point where, you do better than them. And now if you can add pivot tables and, you know, some form of macro to your, you know, database on iPad, you're beating them. You're doing better, you know, which is not a happy place for them to be.
Yeah, I agree. They're in a weird spot.
Yeah.
They're essentially saying iPad is won, Surface is lost. But we still make all of our money from this, and so we're going to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
And a subscription is nice because it's a recurring revenue stream.
Right.
And then we can just update our apps as it makes sense and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure that they have figured out some way to justify it in their corporate meetings. And then you and I look at the pricing and go, yeah, no, I'm good. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, whereas if they just charged me $15, I would probably drop $15.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I go 7 times 12 every single year. No, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, the subscription is just killer.
So
I mean,
they get zero.
It's
no pie for you.
Yeah. It's free for me to try Google's Drive and to try, what's it called? You know, Apple's iWork suite. I can try those for free, so I can have those going in parallel with your product I'm paying for. And the minute I decide that they can do everything that I need it to do as well as yours can, I switch over to them completely, and I just stop paying you. And I guess from one side of it, I understand their thing of, look, we can never stop charging and then start charging again. We can always stop charging. So if it gets even worse and we realize this is a huge problem, we can make it free. You know, you can always lower the price to, you know, what the market will bear. But yeah, I agree. I think I would still be willing to, if it costs $20, if Word cost $20 and it was a full publishing license from Word, I'd drop $20 for Word. I totally would. That's really the edge of my pain threshold. So you get 2.5 months out of me, 3 months. You get 3 months out of me, Microsoft. That's all I'm willing to pay for. I think they're crazy. I think it's, you know, they've got a lock. They've got some sort of a threshold. But it's funny, you know, more and more I read about disruptions and what disruptions look like, the more and more I sit there and I go, man, their office suite is being hardcore disrupted. And they haven't, you know, and it is, it's such a matter of time before Excel gets a competent replacement. And I think for most people, most of the time, it already exists. That's the worst part for them.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and that's a bad place to be. You know, now there's just that minority of loud users. That's the only thing that they have going for them. They're people like you. You are the minority, but you're very loud. And, you know, you refuse to use anything but Microsoft Excel for that particular operation. And you're driving a lot of the reason why people sit there and say, we can't switch over. But as soon as they can start to get to the point where they get even half of people like you, your power users, then it's over. They've got to go to free, you know, to freemium as well, as it were. Some sort of something like that, you know, and that's effectively what Apple's done is they sit there and go, yeah, all of our tools are free. You want to be able to save any size documents, you got to pay us some big old bucks, you know, and, you know, which is kind of annoying. But then again, it's, you know, it's Word, PowerPoint, and Excel. Like how many of us have 5 gigs worth of, you know, documents? Not me.
For work stuff, but...
Well, yeah, once again, you do huge databases of stuff, and Google would love to handle all of your data, so just give it to them.
Yeah, they would. Nope. Well, and that's the funny part about this kind of stuff, too, right, is HP wouldn't let me do it.
Right.
Because they're like, we're not putting all of our company stuff on Microsoft servers. No.
Yeah.
We've got our own solution and suite and tools. And so I was like, HP is not going to flip over to Office 360. They just won't do it.
Right.
And so it's never going to be an option for me.
Right. And I think what you're going to see more and more and more is that people like you are going to be forced to learn how to use databasing programs and just do it yourself, manhandle the data yourself. You'll get fewer and fewer of those really cool tools. Those will be used for, you know, the final touches of building graphics. But I think somebody who builds, if you were to build web app style stuff where it's all HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, but they build these beautiful data sets where you could just say, look at this database with this sort of a thing, you know, and then you do all of that in your own scripting language, and then you just, you know, clean it up with some pretty graphs. You build a tool suite like that. You know, this is how you build a pivot table that runs on
it. Yeah, it already exists, and HP's switching over to it slowly but surely.
Am I the smartest man in the world or what? Probably not, because if I were the smartest man in the world, I'd be selling that stuff, not saying, you know, it'd be a really good idea if somebody would do this. That's the point, though. It is a good idea. It's such a good idea that, yeah, everybody's already doing that. Congratulations for being late to the party. You know, and that's it. I mean, I think that's all she wrote. You know, it's a we're watching it happen. It's kind of exciting. I mean, because in the end, Microsoft still has some brilliant people working there, and they've got a new head of their direction stuff, and they're kind of kicking out the old guard, and, you know, things are changing. So there's definitely potential there, but, you know,
yeah,
it's a great move. It had to happen, and I'm glad that you know, that they didn't wait. You get a new CEO, and his first order of business is, this should have happened a long time ago. Obviously, it's not like they built the app in the last 74 days. They've had this great iPad app just sitting in on somebody's computer waiting to be published for how long, who knows. But everybody says, yeah, it's super well built, which means it's been in the product line for a long time. All he did, his first step as soon as he takes over, is just publish it already, you know, which is good. I mean, it's a good sign. I think it's a good sign for Microsoft. It's a bad sign for Office, but I think in total, it's good. I don't know. It's the right direction, or at least it's a better direction.
Right.
It's cool. Yeah.
That's cool. That is cool.
So
to be honest, man, I'm starting to fade.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
Starting to fade. It's been a long day.
I understand. So I got a couple of stories. I'm gonna do two more, and then we can finish up with the electrical company.
All right.
So Apple is putting together a team of cable insiders to negotiate a TV deal. So earlier this week, there was a really big fluff. Monday, it got completely dry. I honestly, when I read these articles, I was like, that wasn't from this week. I was like, that had to have been like 3 weeks ago. How did these articles get in there? And then I was like, no, that was on Monday. Huge fluff, because there were rumors that Apple and Comcast were working out some sort of a deal that was going to allow Apple to get premium access to Comcast network. They were going to get preferred data transfer, and they were going to build a set-top box. So basically, they were going to work out the same deal they worked out with AT&T, where we'll build your hardware, you get the subscribers, everybody's happy, and you know, you give us a cut of something or other. And this got a lot of headway, because Apple has definitely been hiring cable insiders to work something out. Nobody knows exactly what, but they're working with the cable companies. So that's kind of a big deal. But what exactly that looks like, nobody's sure. This rumor kind of came out as this Comcast Apple deal rumor came out through the Wall Street Journal. And I heard a lot of people that's knee-jerk were like, that's not happening. That's not that. Maybe there's a deal, maybe they're working on something, but the terms of the deal that are rumored are not the terms of the deal, because it doesn't make any sense. Comcast isn't going to pay Apple to do this sort of thing. Why would they give Apple preferred stuff? Why wouldn't they build their own, you know, whatever? Why would they let Apple build the hardware? And my response is, well, it's the AT&T effect. People wanted the iPhone, and it helped AT&T, and that's how they would pitch it. But I think that I think at this point I tend to agree that, you know, there's not necessarily that kind of a deal going on. But I read a conspiracy theory about why this was happening, why that article was written. And what the conspiracy theory was is that it wasn't really about the Apple Comcast deal or whatever deals Apple's working out trying to get content for the next generation of Apple TV. What it was really about was the Time Warner merger with Comcast opens them up to new federal regulations. Anytime you have these giant companies coming together, there's a lot of oversight, there's a lot of analysis, and oftentimes new rules are written to kind of govern these giant corporations so that they don't abuse their monopolies, right? And basically what the rumor was is that the guys at the Wall Street Journal knew this, and they wanted to push the conversation in a certain way. And so they came up with this hypothetical situation where Apple teamed up with Comcast to really abuse net neutrality principles, since they're not necessarily enforced, and it would allow Apple to get huge preferential treatment and basically kind of encapsulate these companies as, you know, they would symbiotically work together to abuse the vast reach that they have. And although it's like a far-fetched deal, some version of that's not necessarily that far-fetched. And so the whole idea of it was to kind of push the regulators to realize how upset everybody would be about it and to start the dialogue in a certain direction of, this is a terrible idea. And so literally, as opposed to letting everybody know it was happening, this article was written, and I tend to agree with this just because it seems like a really bad deal for Comcast. But it was written in order to try to prevent a deal from like that from happening.
Interesting.
And I know that that happens. I know that the media, you know, it was like the whole don't ask, don't tell when that came down. You know, President Clinton had just entered office, and the New York Times, I think it was, wrote an article saying that that was going to be his first order of business. And all of a sudden, the administration gets this article and they're like, what the heck are they talking about? Nobody has said that. And then it came out after the administration had to deal with it. They had to, it basically came down to the New York Times knew that if they wrote this article, the administration would have absolutely no choice but to respond to it and act in order to maintain this powerful presence. Like, yeah, we're in control. They'd have to basically deal with it right then. And so they got to control the dialogue. And so I tend to believe that the Wall Street Journal thinks they have that kind of influence. And I think they do have that kind of influence. And I think that they decided to jerk with Comcast, which is kind of exciting. I like watching that sort of thing.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, don't.
It's frustrating, but I like Wall Street Journal's messing with people.
I know. So if you, I guess, so my long and short of this is, don't expect any sort of a deal like that to come out of Apple and Comcast. Expect something, but not that. You know, the rumors aren't true. And then the other thing is kind of talking about Google Glass and cool, you know, cool VR stuff. One of the big complaints with Google Glass so far is it's ugly, and they're trying to fix that. They have Google has officially inked a deal with Oakley and Ray-Ban, two of the coolest looking sunglasses out there, to build Google Glass eyewear that's not, well, ugly. Man, that's kind of exciting. I like Ray-Bans. I like Oakleys. I don't own any because they're really expensive and I break glasses all the time. I tend to own $12 gas station glasses. But I think I might be just mature enough where I'm starting to maybe be able to own one. I've held on to the same $12 pair for over a year now. But it's nice to see that Google's getting serious about the fact that, you know, not only does the technology have to be cool and functional and powerful, but these things are going to have to look cool, you know, plain and simple. They, you know, they're looking at it from all the right angles, yeah. I think, and it's good news for the product in general.
That's great news.
Yeah. So, speaking of cool things, I think you got one.
Yeah. So Tesla is, you know, we mentioned it really briefly last week, and I know you've kind of, you know, you didn't want to beat the drum too hard. And part of it was because you would start to go off on it. And, yeah. You know, and again, as a friendly reminder, Tesla's been having trouble selling into, I believe it was New Jersey was the latest one.
Yeah.
Where they were told they weren't allowed to sell directly to consumers there, or customers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just like, what the heck? And what was interesting is I was listening to a podcast today, actually. It was Planet Money. Last week, they replayed an old episode because of the whole Tesla deal. And the name of the episode is, like, Why Buying a Car is So Miserable. And, yeah, it was interesting. And they went into the entire history and, you know, how dealerships got started and, you know, and what was going on there. And, you know, and essentially what happened was, you know, they – because they were like this guy's like, you know, what if you could just, like – he's like, how did he describe it? He's like, you know, if I wanted to buy soap, I don't have to go to a Dawn soap store.
Right.
my only choice is Dawn soap. Like, that doesn't, it just doesn't happen. He's like, why can't I just go to a car dealership and choose any car?
Yeah.
Like, oh, this Ford looks good. Oh, this GM looks good. Oh, this Toyota, interesting. And compare and contrast, just like every single other store in the world.
Yeah.
He's like, this is crazy how this current situation works. And so they were talking about, you know, just kind of how that all got started. But they were saying that the rules and protections came into place in the 1920s because, you know, depression hit and people stopped buying vehicles. And, you know, and so all these dealerships, you know, they weren't selling as much as they used to. But the big three car manufacturers continued to make vehicles. and essentially they required the dealerships to buy their cars, otherwise they would shut them down completely. And these dealerships, the way that a dealership got started was not only did you get the land and create the building, but they also bought the inventory
right. For
the cars. And all of the parts that, you know, for repairs and stuff that went with them. Because oftentimes these were in small towns and, you know, waiting for the manufacturer to get you a part was, you know, it's just unreasonable.
Right.
And so there was a huge capital outlay. And then these auto manufacturers, who at the time were the biggest companies in probably the world, but at least the U.S., you know, were taking advantage of them. And so they were like, so they started to change the rules. And it was interesting. What I like about Planet Money is they interview different people. And they're very just short snippet interviews. Then they just kind of weave in with the overall story that they're telling. And one of the people they talked to was Joseph Stiglitz, who is like a world-renowned economist. And he was like, yeah, we actually, like, because of these protections, we were able to go through and do the math. And essentially, because of this, it costs you an extra $1,800 for every car that's sold.
Wow.
You know, as a result of these protections and not allowing competition to happen. And then they did interview a dealership representative, I guess. And they talked about how they're like, look, we were being taken advantage of, and therefore we think it's, and they're like, and we have a huge, you know, capital startup thing, and we provide many jobs for people, you know, thousands of jobs, and we give back to the community, you know, Little League clubs and whatever, and therefore we think we deserve a little bit of protection. And to which I'm like, a little bit?
Yeah.
Let's define a little bit here, because I think your definition of a little is slightly different than my definition of a little.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's that. And then, like, I love it where they got the economists together and they were like, honestly, it's those are not great reasons for why you are good. Clearly, other businesses and organizations have existed that have large capital inputs and they deal with the risk. You should know the risk getting into it, you know? It's not like anyone's forcing you to do it. But they were talking about how, like, they had all sorts of, you know, the way it was set up was, you know, like they were saying GM might have a 5-year contract with a dealership to sell them cars, and GM has to renew it, period. And so they can't just be like, you know what, this is a slow part of town. It just doesn't make sense anymore for us to be here. They just like, you can't, sorry, GM, you have to keep going. You have to renew the contract again. And they put in protections there, which is why the owners can very easily pass it down to heirs.
Oh,
so like, that's why you get a lot of third generation, like I've owned this and my dad owned this and my grandpa owned this, and like because of the way that it's set up that they so really wanted that to happen. And then what was the other one? Oh, they were talking about how the original context of the story was there was a guy who wanted to start up a carsdirect.com website. And his idea was like, I just want to sell cars online. That's all. And so he tried to team up with the auto manufacturers, and they were just like, no, it doesn't work that way, because all of these dealerships have non-compete clauses. They own an area. Like, and you're essentially telling us that you want to compete with every single dealership. And in order for us to do this, we would have to get a waiver or an exception from every single dealership across the nation. It's like, yeah, it's not going to happen. And you're just like, it just hurts, you know, how much control they have. And they were saying that now because of the way the system is set up, you know, obviously this is state level stuff, right? And all of these rules are state level things. And so, you know, which is why we hear about certain specific states happening in it. They say the big auto manufacturers are not as big as they used to be. And so they're like, the part that they pay for taxes is really not that much. Whereas the auto dealers, especially with all the repairs and stuff, is still huge. Yeah. Like, they could be as much as like 20% of the state's revenue. And like, so when you think about lobbying and who it is that you're going to listen to, who do you think you're going to favor?
Oh my gosh.
I know. I just made you totally upset by telling you that. But, and so they replayed it, because they're like, that's what Tesla's going up against, man. And it's, Tesla's right and should be allowed to do it, and it makes no sense. But the rules are kind of already written, and they're a big enough group that the chances of Tesla winning are infinitesimally small. But that's what's cool to see. You know, they've struck a deal with Ohio in order to sell their cars directly. Yeah. You know, that's cool.
But basically, it's funny. It's interesting. I'm glad you said all that, because one of the things about the Ohio agreement is it's basically a Tesla exception. You know, Tesla can sell their cars directly in Ohio, but nobody else can. Which is interesting. I mean, but that goes exactly with what you're saying. And it's just like, I hate dealing with when you look at the auto companies and stuff, and it's like, you know, one of the big things is when times are good, man, the first thing they want to do is install robots to build their cars, because it'll make manufacturing so much cheaper. And they can't, because the unions say, no, you can only install X number of robots, you know, at a time, and you can't displace new workers because of it. And, you know, so it's like the industry is just so stagnant because of these ancient rules just drives me crazy. It drives me nuts. I don't know. It's just, it's so prime for disruption. And it's so funny, because it's like, I was talking with somebody today and talking about, you know, like battery technology and stuff, and it's just so often we thought that, you know, the big problem would be the fact that it's power companies and the oil companies don't like it. And it's not, you know, like here, it's not, they're not worried about battery technology and the death of the oil car. That has nothing to do with it. It's all the internet. They're terrified of the internet. They don't want, you know, they don't want what happened to the record companies. I mean, that is just such this nightmare scenario for every company that comes into every industry that comes into contact with the internet. Like, this big warning, don't let what happened to the record companies happen to us. But here we are. They're letting it happen to them, or they're trying to prevent it from happening. How long can they fight it? You know, at some point, it just, you know, oh man, it just drives me nuts. And I think it's just, there's some other thing. What was the other thing I wanted to say about Tesla? But I can't remember. I'll remember at some point. Probably when we're not on the air. But yeah, I still want one. I'll buy one.
Yeah, I know, they look cool. I was I noticed that Lexus is borrowed. I was driving around town, we saw a lot of Lexus cars. They're pretty popular in LA, apparently.
Yeah. So are the BMWs. Like, did you notice that? Holy
yeah, cow. I didn't notice that. But specifically the Lexuses, I was like, man, those are good looking cars. And then the more I thought about it, I went, oh, I know why. Totally copied the body style of Tesla.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. It can be hard to tell the difference between a Lexus and a Tesla from half a mile away. I'll be honest. But there, you know, what I thought was interesting was how few Teslas there were in that area. You know.
Yeah, I only saw one, I think.
Yeah, I can't drive 3 feet without seeing one where I'm at, but I also live in, you know. I work in the same city that they're built, so there's per capita. Everybody owns one. But I don't know. It's a
It's interesting space.
I love watching it, yeah. We'll keep you up to date.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm ready to go to bed, man.
I know. That's why there's more to talk about.
Sunburn. Look at that line.
Oh man, that's that is significant right there.
Yeah, I enjoyed the sun all week. All right. Thank you everybody for joining us. My name is James Furlow. And totally forgot.
Streets of LA.
And my street smart brother is Matthew Furlow. Hope you like that. And we will talk next time.